From Fox News, it's The Candidates with Brett Baer.
On January 12, 2019, Julian Castro, former Secretary of Housing and Urban Development, announced his presidential run at a rally in San Antonio.
I'm running for president because it's time for new leadership, because it's time for new energy, and it's time for a new commitment to make sure that the opportunities that I've had are available to every American.
Castro was the first member of President Obama's cabinet to announce a presidential run this year. With more on the former HUD secretary, here's Fox News Radio's Jared Halpern.
Julian Castro grew up in politics in San Antonio, a path both he and his twin brother, Congressman Joaquin Castro, have followed. Julian Castro was the youngest person elected to his hometown's city council at the age of 26. A few years later, he lost his first run for mayor of San Antonio, but went on to serve as mayor, first elected in 2009 and reelected in 2011 and 2013.
The days we live in are not easy ones. But we have seen days like this before, and America prevailed. With the wisdom of our founders and the values of our families, America prevailed. With each generation going further than the last, America prevailed. And with the opportunity we build today for a shared prosperity tomorrow, America will prevail.
Castro was the first Hispanic to deliver a keynote address at the Democratic National Convention in 2012. After President Obama's reelection, he nominated Castro to lead the Department of Housing and Urban Development.
I am nominating another all-star who's done a fantastic job in San Antonio over the past 5 years, Mayor Julian Castro.
The cabinet post propelled Castro into Democratic politics. Considered at one point a potential candidate in 2016, he instead endorsed Hillary Clinton.
She believes investing in a blueprint for opportunity that will help all Americans to prosper in this 21st century.
Clinton was rumored to have put Castro on her short list of running mates before settling on Virginia Senator Tim Kaine. Castro instead wrote a memoir after the election, considered a first step to his own presidential run, which he announced in his hometown of San Antonio in January.
We say no to building a wall and yes to building community. We say no to scapegoating immigrants and yes to dreamers. Yes to keeping families together. Yes to finally passing comprehensive immigration reform in this country.
Castro speaks often of his grandmother, the first in the family to immigrate to the United States from Mexico, and how in just two generations he has served in the White House and his twin brother in Congress.
This place, this border crossing at Eagle Pass, is very special for me because my grandmother that I grew up with, Victoria Castro, came across in 1922. She had lost both of her parents in Mexico, and she ended up living with her nearest relatives on the west side of San Antonio.
Castro is promising to log plenty of miles. He has already campaigned in Puerto Rico and says as someone from a state largely ignored in presidential campaigns, he plans to visit all 50 states during his campaign. In Washington, Jared Halpern, Fox News.
Jared, thanks. We now bring in our panel, Amy Walter, national editor of the Cook Political Report, Charles Hurd, opinion editor for the Washington Times, and Chris Steyerwald, Fox News politics editor. Okay, Charlie, make the case for Julian Castro.
He's running for vice president and is probably in a very good position to do that. As we've talked about with the other candidates, you know, you've got it's going to be a competition of people running as far to the left as they can. But at the end of the day, and you know, one of them will manage to, whether it's Elizabeth Warren or Kamala Harris, I think they're in far better position than say, Julian Castro. But at the end of the day, Democratic Party is still very much caught up in this identity politics. And I would be shocked, I'd be astounded if the Democrats don't nominate either a president or a vice president who isn't Hispanic. And I think that Castro is obviously in a very good position to be that person if he makes it through the slog.
Yeah, gave an impassioned speech in San Antonio, Amy, and talked about his heritage and a proud heritage for Hispanics, Latinos in America.
And Texas has moved up its primary, so it is on Super Tuesday, which puts the person from Texas in a stronger position, although
and it's
there
a,
might be
it's a goal for Democrats. It's always been Lucy in the football. That Texas is turning.
In Texas in the general election. This is in the primary election. And, of course, he may be competing with another Texan, Beto O'Rourke, for the favorite son of Texas award. I don't know. I listened to Julian Castro's kickoff speech in San Antonio. It was pretty boilerplate, you know, sort of checks all the boxes on Medicare for all, right? Better job, a humane immigration policy, protect the dreamers, a Green New Deal. There wasn't universal pre-kindergarten. There wasn't anything in there that felt sort of new or inspiring. He is, as Kamala Harris's speech, sort of aspirational. This is the America who we can be. I'm representative of that America, right? His grandmother came from Mexico many, many years ago, and here he is standing up running for president of the United States. Is an America a great place? So this idea that he has, similar to Kamala Harris, this let's redefine what being an American is. Donald Trump has defined what an American is as this. We don't agree. We're going to say that America is much more multicultural, is much more accepting, and that's, you know, I can do that. The message is also the messenger, right? You look at me and you know my story. I'm the best kind of person to send that to deliver that message to the public.
Chris,
so in the Obama primary, and it's real. The Castro brothers were sort of Team Clinton. Back in the day, and they were fairly moderate. And in fact, his inclusion in Obama's cabinet was somewhat of a nod to that. Yes, as part of his biography, but also part of trying to heal the party after a very divisive 2008 primary. He is not without resources. He will be able to raise considerable sums of money. He is an impassioned speaker, and he does have an affecting biography. But what he also has is a certain callowness of youth. There is a certain Democrats are going to be looking for a tough person. The person who's going to go up against Donald Trump is going to have to be tough and is going to have to be thick-skinned and have to be able to deal with it. There is something about Castro, and I don't know exactly what it is, but he does not seem like he has been through the ringer. He does not seem like he is battle-tested. I'm sure that the fights on the city of San Antonio zoning committee were very intense. I'm sure that the local politics in San Antonio are very rough and tough, and I don't doubt that. But he and his brother have, to a certain extent, led a charmed life politically and have had these great advantages. And HUD, no offense to HUD secretaries everywhere, Ben Carson, but not typically a stepping stone to more political. It's not Secretary of State. It's not the stepping stone to more political greatness. He will have a lot to prove in the early going because while his story is an affecting one, his political biography doesn't say that he's a tough guy.
You know, and as you start to see all of these Democratic circles gather the wagons and the fundraising behind different candidates, there will be a challenge for some of these candidates to get that attention, to get that money, to get that expertise behind them. And yeah. Castro may be one of those.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that that's why having that sort of big name early and getting that early exposure and also recognizing that these things are increasingly national campaigns from the get-go and less the regional things that we all have come along covering, you know, state after state after state. It really is right out of the gate. But you know, Democrats are going to be chomping at the bit to take this guy on. They are so eager, and we've seen it in fundraising and in midterms and special elections. Democrats are delighted to open their checkbooks to anything to feel like they're fighting Donald Trump as soon as possible.
Well, and it's also interesting that you know Democrats have talked for quite some time about Latino vote. This is the demographic destiny that this will power Democratic victories nationally, but also in states like Arizona, Texas, Georgia. That hasn't really been the case at this point. And there also are not a lot of high profile Latino Democratic office holders. Mm-hmm. And Julian Castro is the most high profile of that. He was in the cabinet, but you know, the fact that we still are likely to have maybe two or three African-American candidates in the mix, and where the African-American vote, especially in the early stages of the campaign, is a much more powerful block of votes in terms of the numbers and the influence that African-American voters are going to have in places like South Carolina and some of those other southern states that we get into.
And the African-American vote tends to be more monolithic.
Yeah.
And I have a feeling that African-American voters are probably going to settle on either Cory Booker or Kamala Harris, and they're going to be there. Whereas Hispanic voters are different. Hispanic voters in Florida act differently than Hispanic voters in Virginia, who act differently than Hispanic voters in Texas, who act differently than Hispanic voters in California. Not nearly as monolithic, even within an intra-party contest.
Yeah, remember, you know, Hillary Clinton did best in Texas.
Right.
Her success there was the relationship with Hispanic voters.
Yep.
Yeah.
And Ted Cruz won Hispanics in Texas over a very popular Beto O'Rourke, whose real name is what?
Robert Francis.
Robert Francis, yeah, thanks.
He was in a band.
Okay. That's another week.
He skateboarded.
But back to Julian Castro. You know, going up against President Trump, who often says, my poll numbers are really high with Hispanics. I don't get to do that on the show. That
no,
much.
You don't.
No,
you don't.
No, that's really good.
We know what will be the next follow-up viral clip after Rapper's Delight.
It's huge. So here, I've heard that perhaps in June we could get a Supreme Court retirement in Clarence Thomas. And the president, I've heard, is looking at several Hispanic judges to nominate into that position. You know, the issue of Hispanics, to Chris's point about not voting monolithic in one block, does the president, despite all the immigration back and forth, have a case to make against Democrats when it comes to that group of folks?
I think so. And I think that, you know, I hate to get into a discussion about a poll with Mr. Steyerwald. But
you are really in the devil's corner, but right over here.
Yeah. But we're talking fairly small sample size with the poll. But the poll that President Trump and some of his supporters were touting earlier, showing a significant uptick in support among Hispanic voters amid this entire debate about illegal immigration, I think does at the very least raise the important point that it's wrong to treat the Hispanic voters as a monolithic block. They do care about border security just the way regular voter, you know, non-Hispanic voters do. They do care about some of these issues about crimes that Donald Trump is always talking about, wanting to address by getting a hold of control of the border. And so I think that there's a lot of area there where the president does appeal to those voters and can continue to appeal to those voters. And at the very least, Donald Trump has always been very effective at, you know, he is willing to sort of say things that a lot of people cringe at because it doesn't sound politically correct or it's not politically correct.
I think we can get there.
Yeah. We can
it's
just
not.
You can go for it.
I mean, you
not
can put
correct.
That out there on the limb.
But it's not necessarily offensive to all of the people that a lot of people around here think it's going to be offensive to. You know, the famous Cinco de Mayo.
The taco bowl. Even his taco has walls around it.
You know, that's just
we've devolved. We've devolved. This panel has fallen down.
I would be hard pressed to find a single Hispanic voter who's genuinely offended by that. He was talking about the taco bowls in Trump Tower, and he was excited about them. And was it something that somebody that is more politically astute would have done? Probably not.
I don't know how we went from Julio Castro to taco bowls.
Either,
but back to Julian Castro.
Back to Julian Castro, and really where the targets are going to be in 2020. Gosh, I'm still trying to figure out what year we're in.
Mm-hmm.
Democrats are going to look at Arizona very closely. Mm-hmm. Now, Texas, obviously, they'd love to put in play, but I think there is a realistic assessment of the difficulty of Texas and the expense of playing in Texas. Arizona, a place that Trump underperformed significantly from Mitt Romney, where obviously a Democrat won a very close Senate race in 2018, a place that obviously has a significant number of Latino voters. That's the kind of place where Democrats really, really see if it's about expanding the playing field in 2020, rather than going to Texas, go to Arizona, play in those traditional states that you always do, Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, Michigan, but put Arizona on the map. Could somebody like Julian Castro add just, you know, one more little bump for right. them? And remember, this is a state, it's not like we weren't talking about the wall and the caravan, we're talking about all those things in the lead up to 2018, and Democrats won in Arizona, and they also won in Nevada.
You know, what's interesting is that those states, Texas, Nevada, Arizona, all recruited businesses from California mm-hmm. and tried to draw them in, and effectively did. But in the process, changed the demographic of their voting population, and it's much more purple.
Especially those Texas suburbs. I mean, what's going to be really fun to watch, I mean, obviously, I'm super dorky about this. Most people aren't going to think this is fun. I do. Are the suburban districts that didn't get as much attention in 2018, but Democrats are already saying that they're yep. targeting in and around Austin and Houston and Dallas.
Yep.
And that winning a statewide contest, still difficult because Texas, obviously a big place, lots of big rural swaths, just running up the score in the cities and then doing well in the suburbs isn't quite enough, but it certainly could have a big impact on the number of seats in the House that Democrats have going forward.
But just to lay the table here for Julian Castro, he would have to have a big moment or a tectonic shift to really break through currently looking at this field.
Right. I think, you know, back to the beginning of Charles's point, there are people who run for vice president. I don't know that John Edwards wasn't running for vice president for part of his time. And also he had other reasons to stay on the road. But there are candidacies that are arranged. Some people run for president. Some people launch long shot runs for president because they want to push an issue in. Somebody like Jay Inslee from Washington wants to talk about climate change more. So he's going to run to make people talk about climate change more. But there are people who run because what an amazing way to raise your profile. What an amazing way to get in the national discussion. Here you are in a state where Beto O'Rourke surpasses you, blows past you to become this national political figure, and you are supposed to be the rising star. Mm-hmm. And Castro says, no, I am here and I will be heard from. And by the way, if the Democrats do nominate a person of power for their nominee, they will need something to help them out. And and Castro could definitely be that guy.
Yeah, right. Nobody would have picked Joe Biden
right.
in 2008 as the obvious
right.
vice presidential pick. But I think his performance in the debates really proved that, you know, he was the kind of person that would be a good, you know, seasoned voice for President Obama.
And we will look at Joe Biden in coming podcasts. Mm-hmm. Panel, thanks. That will do it for this week. You can hear more of this series at foxnewspodcast.com or wherever you download podcasts. Make sure to leave a rating and a review. We want to hear from you. So for Amy and Charles and Chris, I'm Brett Baer, and we'll see you next time.